Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're going to continue here where we stopped last time in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 in terms of withholding sexual favors, as people call it, and it becomes a ground for separation, first in the mind and the heart, and after that, and after it continues, it leads to physical divorce. And we're going to see more about that also in the law that God gave Israel, that Jesus Christ gave Israel in Sinai. And the condition that he placed there, and the responsibility and the accountability on the part of both men and women, in which case if they don't do it, you see, they're free, in essence, to walk away from each other. And so he says here in verse 3, actually let's backtrack to verse 7, that is verse 1 in chapter 7, and now concerning the things of which you wrote me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. You say, what do you mean it is good for a man not to touch a woman? Well, the concept was, as he later on made it very plain, a time of distress. In verse 26 it says, I suppose therefore that this is good because of the present distress, you see. And then he told them in essence, it would be good for them just to remain in the condition in which they are. You know, if they are married, remain married. If they are not, you know, remain single, because he did not want them, you know, to have troubles in the flesh, because things were very difficult in those days. So you have to understand it under the circumstances, what the teaching was all about. And unless you know the entirety of the law of God, you know, then you think that there is a new doctrine here and people should abide by it. And some people think, well, you know, that's celibacy, and that's how the priesthood, you know, in the Catholic Church, you know, they have celibacy, and women, you know, they're nuns, have celibacy. Well, all these things are doctrines of demons that Paul himself branded as such, where he says, you know, those people, they forbid to marry. That's contrary to the law of God, you know. So to go around it, said, oh, well, we are marrying Jesus Christ. You know, the nuns say, we are marrying Jesus Christ. There is no such a thing. Jesus Christ does not marry an individual. He marries a whole church. And that happens only at his coming, you see. So those are liars when you think about it, claiming to be married to Christ, and he's not married to them. To begin with, he doesn't even know them. What a waste of life. And so he says here, well, you brought this issue because he wrote to them prior to that, about the present distress. And verse 2, he says, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, you know, in other words, if you don't get married, you're going to have problems. Let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. And now that they do, he says, that's the way you're going to behave. Let the husband render his wife the affection due her. He can't play games after that. He says, oh, well, things are tough. You know, I'm busy. You know, I'm you know, hard at work. You see, I can't think about this. I have a headache, you know. Both ways. Men and women are doing it to this very day for so many reasons. He says, don't do it. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. That's the law. If you do not abide by this law, you are not of Christ in this matter. That's what Christ said. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you do not do the things that I say? He just told you. This is what would Jesus do. How many are guilty of that? For selfish reasons. You see? And instead of resolving the matter, in order to, you know, for them to be able to go back and resume the relationship, you know, they just hold grudges against each other, and they go for weeks and months and maybe years withholding favor. And what does that do? It causes immorality, or at least thoughts of it, you know, in the best scenario. And, you know, the desire for it, you know, and when we have great desires, we'll get it wherever we can. God says, don't do it. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her. Well, that's, you know, the poor translation. All it means is have sex with her. That's all it means. You know, there's no need to camouflage that, but people that are pure in their own sight than God, you know, they begin to change the language to make it unoffensive to people. They'd rather be offensive to God and unoffensive to people. That's all God is saying, is, you know, have sex. You owe it to her. As the Apostle Paul said, owe no man but to love. In first, that is in the book of Romans chapter 13, when he is describing the essence of love. He said, what is love? Love is a fulfilling of the Torah. When you obey the laws of God, Then you have love and grace and mercy and compassion and faith and holiness and so forth. And when you don't, you obviously don't have it. And then he's explaining to them something else that a lot of people don't understand it, especially in this day and age, you see, where they promote this concept, well, the woman has authority over her own body. She can do with her body whatever she wants. She's got rights over her body. That means she can abort. She can murder. That's what they mean by that. Of course, they're not going to say murder. You see, in order to make it something that is not murder, they say, well, it's not even a human being. What is it? You don't hear anybody saying, well, this is my fetus. You know, let's make a fetus. No, let's have a baby. That's a child. The moment it occurred, the conception, that's your child. You see how perverted and demented human minds are. And they're going to account for it, give account for it in the day of judgment. And they can play all the games they want today. God made it very plain. The wife, in verse 4, does not have authority over her own body. There is no such a thing. In other words, if you gave yourself to be a wife to somebody else, you lost control over your body. That doesn't mean that he can abuse it. That doesn't mean that he can misuse it. That's not what it's talking about, obviously, because some people can go from one extreme to the other, because that would be just as equally wrong. That's not what it's talking about. So people should not take advantage of this law. That is, a man should not take advantage of this law. Otherwise, he's in the wrong. You cannot mock God. God knows what's in the heart, and he wants and demands truth in the inward parts. You see? So understand what he's talking about. If you committed yourself to be married, you cannot withhold, you see, the sexual desires of your husband away from him. You are his sexual desire. You are his wife. And the other way around. A woman cannot do it to a man, and a man cannot do it to a woman. That's what he's saying here. This is the law of God. The wife does not have authority over her own body, so God decreed. But the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. That's equality. Pure equality, you see. And God is not a male chauvinist. It's demented, you know, perverted women, you know, like to present him and present men who believe in the same thing, you know, that God believes. You know, your male chauvinist pig, you know, they call them. Well, if they're abusers, that's a different story, you see. But if they are not, you have no right to call them that, because you're going to have to give account for every word that proceeded out of your mouth. You spoke lies. You see, you are bearing false witness. You're calling somebody who is not what he is, or that, you know, calling, you know, accusing people things that they have not done from the side, you know, from the point of view of God. A lot of people don't think that way. You know, it's very fashionable today for women to put down men. And it has been fashionable, unfortunately, for men for centuries and ages to put down women. And both of them are wrong. You see? And that's what the law of God teaches you, what is right, what is wrong. What would Jesus do? What is love? And because on both sides, they are ignorant and biblically illiterate and do not study the law to begin with, they've been taught to despise it. That's why they have many problems. You see? You want harmony? You know, if you want harmony in music, you study the law of music. Then you know how to produce harmony, but if you don't, what are you going to have? That's exactly what the law of God. And so he says, verse 5, do not deprive one another except with consent for a time. Even with consent, it's for a time. Don't say it, you know, well, for 10 years we're not going to have it. You see? Because what would happen then? You know, the sexual desires will overpower you and you're going to commit adultery or fornication or immorality or even just think about it. You see? So every law of God, every word, every instruction that he gives us has a purpose to defend us from destruction, from perversion, from evil, from falling into the wrong hands. And if people don't know that, you see, then obviously they think, well, you know, the law of God is not for me. It's bad. It's harsh. Those are ignorant people. One of these days their eyes are going to be opened, they're going to be enlightened, and they're going to see the glory of God for what it is through his law, through his Torah, through his instructions and teachings. And they will see the majesty of it. And why men like David and others just reveled in that glory of the Torah. And why so many Jews to this very day still do? Because they understand, in spite of the blindness that is there in terms of Christ and other things, they still do understand the glory and the majesty that are found in the law, which is the very nature and mind of God, and ironically, Jesus Christ, the one that they reject on one hand and accept on the other, at least for a little while longer. And so he said, do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. Well, that's a legal reason, you see. God accepts that. And, you know, you're not going to pray, you know, and fast all the time, you see. Just, you know, temporary time that you do it for, you know, because, you know, you're going through some kind of problem, trouble, whatever it may be. You need to see God with your whole being and heart, and obviously you cannot have your mind on sex. And that's exactly what God told them when they came before him in Mount Sinai, when they came to that marriage supper before him, spiritual marriage supper. He told them, I want you to wash your clothes, wash your bodies, and don't touch a woman. That means you women don't touch men, and you men don't touch women. Have your mind on me and me only. You see, that's the reason why in the temple, and to this very day in the Orthodox synagogue, men and women don't sit together. Why? Because they come there to worship God, to pray before God. They don't come there, you know, to have their mind and heart on a woman, on sex, on romance. And that's how far we have strayed from it, and we don't understand and realize those laws of God and why they were given. And one of these days, things are going to be made right for the entirety of the community of God. Until then, you know, Gandhi is going to put up, you know, with a lot of ignorance that is still in our midst, because we don't even understand why. And that's what he's saying here. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourself, you see, when you give yourself to fasting, whatever you do it with all of your heart, you see. We do it as unto the Lord. That's what he's talking about here. Give yourself to fasting and prayers, and you cannot give yourself to fasting and prayers and at the same time do something else, you know, that is very involved, like sexuality, you see, and all the passions and desires there. That's what Christ was saying. Look, you know, you cannot serve God and mammon. You either love one, hate the other. Your mind is going to be somewhere else, and God doesn't want that. So if you are to fast before him and pray before him, do it all the way and wholeheartedly. And if you are going to have sex with your wife or your mate, have it all the way, you see, and nobody else should come in between at that time. And it goes both ways. You see, no interruptions, because that's the nature of God. And so he says, you give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again when that is over, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. This is what's going to happen if you are not going to go back and have that relationship. Satan enters in, and he's going to use it, and he's going to awaken those desires in people and going to remind them, hey, you've got desires, you've got passions and all that. You don't get it from your man or your woman. Go get it somewhere else. I'm going to help you. You see? So he said, as he said in other places, you know, we are not ignorant of his devices. We know how he works. And if people are going to disobey these laws, they are going to fall prey for the devil, and they wouldn't know it. You see, and that creates abuse in the family and pollution of themselves, and they are no longer holy, and their sons and daughters would no longer be holy, you see. And that's what the law of marriage is all about. We have to study all these matters and fully comprehend and understand it. Otherwise, we have so many problems, and that's the reason why we have so much divorce. You know, it's divorce in the mind, divorce of emotions and feelings, divorce of the flesh, divorce of, you know, of all kind of sorts. Because we're disobedient to the law of God. We are lawless people in so many ways. And so he says, again in verse 5, do not deprive one another except with consent for a time. You see? Both of you have to agree. It's not only one person says, I'm going to do it and I don't care what you think, what you feel. You both have to sit down and discuss it and consent. So everything is done in harmony. And so you give yourself to each other and to God wholeheartedly. In doing so, you will have a wonderful marriage, and if you don't, you're not going to have one. It's as simple as that. And you're not going to have a beautiful family either. And so he says in the scriptures, basically, he makes it very plain, the way the mind of God works and functions and what he commands us to do. And people don't look at that and say, well, this is the law of God, the law of Christ. What would Jesus do? You see, these are the part of the same teachings that he gave in Sinai, and let's go to Sinai and see exactly what Christ said there. And in Exodus, after he spoke the 10 oracles to all of Israel, this is what he told Moses. Let's go to Exodus chapter 21 and verse 11. 21:11 was he's giving them again laws that they have to abide by and do. Actually, to get the whole account here, let's backtrack to verse 7 so you can get the whole story there. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. And, you know, that was the way things were at the time. And today you call it hired workers, you see. That's what we are. You know, we go and get a job. What are we doing? We are selling ourselves. That's all it means. You know, you prepare yourself for an interview, you prepare yourself to be sold, you see. And when the boss accepts you, then you become his property in that sense. And you do whatever he says, you know, in the job. So, it's, you know, when you understand it properly, then you understand what slavery was all about in Israel. It was not the slavery that was in the world. God forbid them from having this kind of slavery in terms of their own people. And so, you know, I have to understand it, you know, what's really happening here. But we're not going to concentrate on the concept of slavery here, but on the concept of this issue that we are dealing with. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do, you know, which they did on the seventh year. If you want to understand more of that, you know, go back to the first series. We went through that in detail. And then he says in verse 8, if she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, you see? Now, that's the reason why he took her from her father. Not only to work for him, but literally to marry her, to be his wife. And after all, you have to understand what you're talking about here. This is within the family context. The only people that lived around you were your uncles and cousins and nephews and nieces and things like that, you see? Unless you understand that, you don't really get the flavor of what you're reading here. And the real meaning. They don't have the background here, the proper background. And so this is what he's saying here, you know. Well, he took one of his relatives, but, you know, he doesn't like her for whatever reason. He has betrothed her to himself. He says, so, but if she doesn't please him, doesn't please the master, and he shall let her be redeemed, you know, let her family buy her back, pay whatever he paid and take her back. And he shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. What does it mean, deceitfully? He told her parents, I'm going to marry your daughter, and he's not marrying her. That's deception, because as soon as a man and a woman are engaged, they're already bound by the law of marriage. You see? So he cannot play games at this point. He has obligations
to treat her.
And so again, that's what it says here. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed, that is, by her family, and he shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. And that's the way God viewed it. This is God speaking here. This is Jesus Christ speaking to Moses. This is what would Jesus do, you see? And people, you know, they don't pay attention to it. They become lawless. They come before Christ and says, I don't even know you because you are lawless. You do not abide by my law, which I gave you, of which I said when I came in the flesh, don't think that I came to do away with the Torah or the prophets, you see, because I'm the one that gave it. I didn't come to do away with it. Not one jot or one tittle shall ever pass from the law until all things be fulfilled, you see. And how many people pay attention to that? How many people in the past 2,000 years have been teaching it? How many people, on the other hand, were trying to destroy, to burn, to hate, to abhor, you see, and to seduce the people of Israel, of Judah, who adhere to these teachings and try to make them depart from it and come to their camp, the camp of the lawless, of the abusers, of the evildoers, of the demon worshippers. That's what they were, thinking that they were worshipping Christ. That's what the devil has done to all mankind. That's why it's in Revelation, the devil has deceived the whole world. That's why God calls that great church the whore, and those that came out of her 500 years ago, the harlots. You see? Her daughters. and all the others that came from her. Because all of them despised the law of God, the nature of Christ, the reason for which he had to die, to redeem his wife, his bride, Israel. And that's what he's saying here. And if he has betrothed her to his son, instead of him, he gave her to her son, to his son, that is, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. Now there is a law. And God governs the relationship of his people by his law. That's his nature and character. You see, he's the boss, he makes the rules. You abide by it or else. That's as simple as that. That's what he says in the end of the book of Malachi. You either remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I gave to Israel, for all of Israel, that is, and all the statutes in Sinai, or else I'm going to bring utter destruction on the entirety of the whole earth. You see? That's as simple as that. And so he says, if he betrothed her, he got her engaged to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. And God is going to set the rules, not man, not culture, not society, not church, not anybody. We don't own anybody. We're not the creators. We're not the saviors and redeemers. We don't die, you know, for anybody. We don't give life to anybody. We have no business being in the law-making, you see, sphere of governing lives. Unless it is, you know, in accordance with the law of God, you know, the little rules and regulations, you know, red lights and traffic, building codes, things like that, all kind of things like that. But when it comes to governing human relationships, God left it to himself. That's his prerogative. He's the maker and the creator. And he says, that's the way it's going to be. If you get engaged, if you get married with somebody, here are the laws. You better keep it or else. And so he says, if he takes another wife, and man looks at that, depending on what society he's in, or what century he's in, what culture, you see, and for the past many centuries, man looks at that and says, what do you mean if he takes another wife? That's bigamy. You know, there is a law against it, can put you in jail for it. Well, you try to put God in jail. He came up with this law. He says, if you take another wife, took it for granted. He could have said, hey, from now on, no more, only one, because in the beginning I made you only one. One man, one woman. You see? No, God allowed here exceptions, and he allowed, you know, different administration, and he allowed certain things based on circumstances of the time. You see? And he cannot defy the law of God, and he cannot tell a person like that under, you know, this administration, you're a bigamist, going to put you in jail, because you will be in the wrong. You see? You're the lawless one. And look how far we have departed from God that, you know, these kind of things become evil in our sight. We are the evil ones, not God. That's what God says through the Isaiah the prophet in chapter 5. Woe unto him, verse 20, I believe, that makes, you know, light darkness, and darkness light, you know, and truth becomes evil, and evil, and so forth. You see, you're mixing everything upside down. You go by the law of God. Now, as time went by, because society became, instead of agrarian, you know, city dwellers, more and more, well, then created a lot of problems and came to the point where even the rabbi says, you know, it's not a good idea to have more than one wife. You have a lot of problems, you see. And even the apostle Paul had to tell the elders, he didn't tell the congregation, but he told the elders, you shouldn't have more than one wife. Not because it is against the law of God, but because there were a lot of problems, you see. So sometimes circumstances will have to determine and alter, you know, certain teachings of God. But they have to be always in accordance with the will of God based on the circumstance too. At this point, it was not an issue. People were in agrarian society. You need a lot of children. They were your employees. Take care of all of your property, you know. If you've been a farmer, you know how hard it is to produce a lot of food for the whole family unless you have plenty. And if he's got a wife, she's the only wife he has. She's pregnant. He's the only poor guy that has to work from morning until evening, you see. It creates complications. So you have to understand it from within that point of view. You see? Go into the circumstances. Get into the shoes of those people who live in those areas, in those circumstances, and then look at it from the point of view of God at the same time. Then you begin to understand what you're reading properly instead of having contempt and disdain for it. And that's what people have to this very day. Even a lot of people who have the Spirit of God or otherwise converted, they've got a lot of problems with certain laws of God, and this is one of them. So if he says, if he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. Just like we read what Paul was saying. And Paul was saying what he was saying based on this very law that we are reading here that was given by Christ, you see, in Sinai. Now, he's not teaching a new religion. He's opening the book of the law and he's teaching from it. And he's referring to this scripture, even though it's not recorded there. You see, he doesn't get it out of the air. That's what oftentimes they said without even quoting a particular place. They said, as it is written. Well, the Corinthians, he couldn't tell them as it is written. They don't know the law, like the Jews do. To the Jews, he would say, as it is written in Moses. To the Corinthians, he had to explain. And then as he taught them the law of God, they knew where it was. You see, put it all together and then you begin to understand. And so he says, these are three things that you must do. What happens if you don't? You see, there comes the issue of the divorce. What happens if you don't fulfill these three basic categories that God says? You've got to have it within marriage or else. You've got to take care of all of her needs for food. You don't want her to go hungry. You've got to take care of all of her clothing. You don't want her to go naked. Or, you know, have things that are worn out. She's ashamed and things like that. And you have to take care of all of her sexual needs. And you can't say, I don't like her just because I have another wife. So what? That's your problem. You see? You cannot say, well, I don't love her anymore. I love the other woman. So what? That's your problem. God says, you better take care of all her needs. You see? Or else you have a ground for divorce here. And so he says in verse 11, if he does not do these three for her, not just two, but three of them, then she shall go out free, without paying money. That is the money that they gave her parents when she was sold to them. What does that mean? You got a divorce here. When she goes out, she's free. She's not under bondage anymore. You see, because the master is disobeying the law of God, she's not under this law of marriage. And therefore she can go and marry somebody else. Now this is the law of God. You see? And if you don't study the entirety of the law of God, you don't comprehend and perceive and understand properly the law of marriage and divorce and everything that goes in between. So there you have, you know, a second example of that. And the first example of Ezra and Nehemiah, you know, they're putting away the idol worshippers. And then we mentioned that also in Corinthian. And so we're talking about this concept here of the sexual needs, sexual desires, and clothing and food. You see, these are the conditions of marriage. So here is a law of the binding and loosing that most people don't study. You know, the so-called churches of this world, or even, you know, those who call themselves churches of God, they don't study this law to understand, to comprehend, and they do not teach people to abide by this, or else there is a ground for divorce there. You see? And so they invent their own doctrines of binding and loosing, and they keep it only within the so-called the church. No, the woman herself could have made that decision. You don't obey the law of God concerning these three things. I'm walking out. And God is with me, not with you. And I don't need any, you know, rabbi or any minister or any church or any Sanhedrin or, you know, high priest or whatever it may be to make this decision. You see? That was the religion of God, the nature of God, the character of God, the constitution of God, the laws of God, and people, you know, began to do their own thing. And to this very day, they do their own thing, and they think that they are the servants of Christ. You see, that's what God says. A lot of, you know, you're in Babylon, you're in confusion, and many of you to begin with are lawless, and I don't even know you. That's the way you choose to walk, because you despise me, and you call me Lord, and yet you do not do the things which I say, and he said that, not men. You see? It's as simple as that. And so she does, you know, he doesn't accomplish these three, and it goes both ways. If the woman is not willing to do any of those three, and of course, the woman generally is not in that category, but, you know, there were a lot of women where they had the money and their husband didn't have the money. There were a lot of rich women. You read a lot about it in the writing of the disciples. You know, there were a lot of rich women, and they were in charge of the household. You know, they just ended up with the business that their father gave them or things like that. Or maybe the former husband, you know, that he died and he left them with a big business. Now they are marrying somebody else. And they, in essence, are the ones that take care of the clothing and the food and the sexual rights of the men. You know, those things happen too. Well, in either case, that's the law of God. Those three things, those three conditions are not fulfilled, that's ground for divorce. And so that is still within the the law of God that, until you die, he says you should not part. But then, you see, there are always then those exceptions in everything. In most everything, there are exceptions. In terms of stealing, God says, don't steal. But if you walk down the road and you're hungry and you see, your neighbor's orchard and you've got fruit trees or grain or things like that, he said, it's okay. You go over there and you eat. Just don't take it in your pocket, and don't cut it, with instruments, you see. But otherwise, you can eat. And that's not stealing, you see. A lot of people don't understand that. They don't comprehend the law of God. God says, do not commit murder, you see. And yet, if somebody murdered your brother for whatever it may be, God allows that. And that very word is used also there, not only kill. You see, it doesn't say thou shalt not kill, it says thou shalt not murder. But God allows a man whose brother or father or son or whatever it may be was killed by somebody else to go and murder that person. Plan for it and go murder that person. And if he, flees a city of refuge or things like that, he sees him there and says, hey, there you are. You see, and God does not hold him accountable. So if you understand, also within the law of God, there are those exceptions. You see? And it's important to understand that. And because people do not study the entirety of the law of God, they have a lot of contradictions in their minds and they think that they're in the Bible. They're not in the Bible, they're in their minds. Because they're in confusion. You got to study the whole matter. As Solomon, he says, he that does not study the whole matter and speaks is a fool. There are too many fools out there. And they don't know it, but they're wise in their own conceit. You see? That's what James says. Do not be many masters. A lot of people want to be masters. Everybody wants to be a teacher. Everybody wants to be an evangelist. Everybody wants to be this or that. Well, if you're qualified and called, you see, if you're an expert, if you're a professional, so to speak, that's one thing. But if you're not, just like the law of the land, will tell you, you cannot be a lawyer, you cannot be a doctor, you cannot be any of those professionals unless you've got all the credentials. You see, that's the law of God too. It's the same thing. Otherwise, we're going to be responsible, and there is malpractice there. Issue on the part of the government, the society, and also on the part of God. Got to be malpractice against you, and God is going to hold you responsible for it if you do your own thing and you claim that God is the one that is behind you. You see, and then you yourself are partly ignorant. It doesn't mean that any one of us is perfect. We're not perfect. We make mistakes. But at least we have to have a good measure of credentials, both being approved by God and by man in terms of what we know, what we teach. And so this is what he's saying here in this matter. Let's go back now to the beginning of the chapter where we read about another case here. We begin the chapter by reading the words of God. Now, these are the judgments which you shall set before them. This is God speaking. This is Jesus Christ speaking to Moses. You see? These are the doctrines of Christ. That's what it means, the doctrine of Christ. See, when the apostles were using this terminology, they knew what they were talking about. Those who came after them didn't know what they were talking about. This is what they were talking about, the law of Moses. That's the doctrine of Christ that he came to amplify and magnify. And so he's the one saying it. Now, these are the judgments which you shall set before them. It's not our own choice. We don't decide. He is the lawgiver, not us. And so he said, if you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go free and pay nothing. That's the law of God. And if he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. But, you have an issue. If his master, while he's during that period of time, you're working for your boss, and your boss says, look, while you're working here, if you want a wife, I have one of my daughters, and obviously, people want to get married, young, and 7 years is a long time to go without a wife, without sex, without children, things like that. In either case, God says, if this is what happens, if his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, and the wife could be either one of his maidservants or maybe one of his daughters, whichever is the case. But if she has children with him, you know, they're married, she has children, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. Now, what's happening here? They're married. Why can't she go with him? That's the law of God, you see. But what happens here, you have another issue that you have to deal with. God says, if a person is going to be a responsible person, he's going to have to think about these matters. That if he's going to marry one of the servants, or even the daughter of this man, you see, that's still sort of his property, and she cannot go out with him, he cannot take her with him, you see. And though she's his wife, he's going to make a decision. If I want a wife, I'm going to have to stick around here for the rest of my life. And if I want to be responsible, I'll say, okay, for 7 years I'll forego that, and then I go out. Or I'm going to have enough money to be able to pay for her and pay the master and take her with me. But let's say he couldn't afford it. He couldn't do it. You see? Well, he leaves, she stays. What happens? You have a sort of a divorce because they're cut off now from each other. So he goes out and he marries another wife. You see, he's no longer a slave, and this woman stays here with her children. And she's cut off from him. Well, what happens with her? She's still a young woman. You see, what is she going to do for the rest of her life? Well, a divorce has taken place because that's a part of the administration of this reality. And then she may end up marrying somebody else because she's not bound, for the simple reason that this man was not willing to remain with her. So he departed. In essence, he left her. He abandoned her in that sense. You see? And so you have another exception there for divorce in that sense, and then remarriage. So a lot of things in the laws of God, unless you know the entirety of the matter, you know, you don't really comprehend everything. And God has dealt with many issues here. And so, obviously, he had two ways of going about it. Either sticking around, and this is what he's talking about here in verse 4, if his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant plainly says, hey, I love my master, you know, I love my wife, you know, I have nothing to complain about here, I'm doing well, and to begin with, you know, I really cannot manage myself, you see, that's also the major issue there. You see, because everybody wants to go back to his own property. But he's saying here, you know, this is my uncle. He's a good uncle. That's what it is. It's a part of the family. You see, you have to understand this context always in this background, or else you don't get what's happening here and why God gave these kind of laws. He's within his family. You know, that could be his good uncle or cousin, whatever it may be, or grandfather, or, you know, member of the family. He said, you know, the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children. I will not go out free. You see, my wife and children, all these things are more important to me. And besides, you know, I have a good master than just walking out. A lot of people walk out on their wife, on their children. Well, what happens then? A lot of problems. And so that's what we find ourselves going through. Unfortunately, that is the societies in many nations all around the earth. An awful lot of societies, be it the social services, you know, the police, the government, whatever it may be, they have a lot of difficulties in finding out where the father is that escaped, that could not care, you know, much about his children and his family and things like that. And therefore, it is a blight on the society. And to this very day, that's a problem that many women find themselves in. And immediately after that, you know, they go into poverty. And there is even one great problem that a lot of women experience, especially within the Jewish community. It may not be the same in other communities, but it's a reality. A woman like that doesn't know where her husband is, you know, she has a hard time knowing what to do with her own life, personal life. And here in this country, you know, or other countries, it may make it easier for them, you know, if they want just to end up that relationship. They may go to the courts and have it finished, annulled, or whatever it may be. In the Jewish community, however, because they abide by the halakha, the Jewish law, we're not talking about the biblical law, unfortunately, you know, they departed from the biblical law, and they're governed by the halakha, the rabbinic law. You see, which they claim, some of them claim that, you know, went back all the way to Sinai, and some of it, it's true, was from Sinai, since not everything was recorded, but many of these regulations by which much of the Jewish community lives by, they're all begun about 2,000 years ago and long after that. They call it the halakha. You see, halakha means a way, a walk, you know, a way of life. And according to that, you know, if they don't find the husband, if he could be either kidnapped or just run away, or who knows, maybe lost his mind, you know, amnesia or whatever it may be, the woman is stuck for years before the rabbis determine that he's dead. You see, but they have no evidence to determine that, so an awful lot of women are stuck for many, many years. And they call it the aguna, the law of the aguna. Aguna comes from a word ogen. You know, ogen is the anchor that you put in the bottom of the sea. You see, every ship has that, and then it is anchored. And so this woman is like, you know, a woman, you know, hanging with an anchor around her neck, and she's stuck there, and she cannot go. She's stuck, you see, with that marriage, and whether the husband is alive or dead, you know, since nobody knows. And it takes an awful lot to free a woman like that. Obviously, it's not the law of God, but the reality is that's what happens when a man is not responsible and is leaving his wife. And God knows that. God knows the human nature. He knows what's in the heart of men. He knows that there are people who are willing to forsake their wives, you know, and children for whatever reason. And so this law is there to make it understandable and clear in the mind of the man. If you are going to give yourself in, you know, during these 6 years to the need and the desire for marriage and for children, you're going to have to think about it twice or maybe seven times before you make a decision like that, because you would not be able to take your wife and children with you. Now, in most cases, they probably had some kind of an arrangement. The man probably went to work and just bought them so he could take them away from the master, you see. And in other cases, he was forced to just remain there. And that's exactly what happens here. But in this case, it's not a question of being forced to. In this case, he says, I'm going to stick around because I love my wife and my children, and I love my master. And I love my job. I have no complaints. I've been well taken care of here, and I'm willing to stay there. So the issue here is not with the person who is willing to stay and have the wife. It's not even with the fact that he had taken a wife and children that legally, according to the law, do not belong to him but to the master. But if he stays there, it's okay with the master, if, you know, they're still his. But the issue here, what happens if he walks away from her? You see? Well, then you have a case of abandonment. Wife and child abandonment, you see? Under which case, the law of marriage is, in essence, null and void. She is not under burden, and the master can give her to another man, and that would be a legal thing to do. You see? There would be no committing adultery there. And so, in essence, you see another exception here, that even though the law was cut and dry and clear, that people should not separate from each other as long as they are alive, and if they do, they cannot remarry. They can, you know, should just stay separate if this is what they've chosen. And yet, you see also exceptions at the same time. So, you know, these are all exceptions that God gave to Israel through Moses. And oftentimes, when you read certain statements that seem to be very dogmatic, it's also good to have the entirety of the knowledge of the law. So you would see what is it that God said under certain circumstances. Otherwise, you misunderstand some of the scriptures. And for that reason, a lot of people either go to the right, either go to the left, you see, either far extreme or in between, whichever it may be, instead of studying the entirety of the law of God, and then they will have the proper knowledge and understanding, you see. And it's not just a matter of, you know, as people say, you know, striking a balance. It's not striking a balance. It's doing it right. You see? That's what counts. You know, striking a balance, that's a human concept. Sort of compromise, you know. Not there and not here. God says, you know, you go the right way, the straight way. And if this is what you want to call, you know, striking a balance, be, you know, let it be so. But the reality is we have to be more concerned about doing it right, God's way, you see. And in this case, it was all right with God in these other circumstances. If the man is not willing to remain married to this woman, that's in essence what he's saying, and he's divorcing in essence his wife and his children by walking away. Well, as Paul would say, a brother or sister are not under bondage in this case. If somebody departs, and this man departs. So when the Apostle Paul mentions that, he's not saying something new. A lot of people think, you know, that the Apostle Paul is inventing a new religion there, you know, they call it the Pauline doctrine, you know, of Christianity. They think that he's in essence the founder of Christianity. That is the one that departed from the law of God, as they think about it, you know, Judaism. And there's no such a thing. This is the law of God that he's quoting here. And this is the very one that we are reading here. And so, if he's willing to stay, it's okay. He stays with the family. And then in verse 6, we read what happens if he stays there. Anyway, this is another law, another exception here, about a person that departs, just like the Apostle Paul said later on. We're going to stop at this point and continue next time. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.